Corner. My name is Lucas Barfield. I'm a Tacoma cannabis writer, researcher, and reporter. It's great to be back on the air with you, and I'm joined by my co-host, Uncle Dig, who's broadcasting with us down from Oregon. How you doing today, Uncle Dig?
Good. A little sluggish. Now that harvest season, and at least outdoor, is done, I'm definitely settling in for a more relaxing winter time.
Yeah, the weather has changed. Fall is upon us, and here in Washington, it almost kind of feels a little wintry sometimes. I just noticed yesterday we haven't really had a lot of rain, which is kind of good if you're out walking around, but, you know, we're kind of in a drought, so we do need the rain. What's going down in Oregon right now with the weather? And I think the wildfires are still going, huh?
Yeah, but honestly, in my area this last weekend through this week, we had some red flag warnings, so everyone was really worried that it's gonna go up like a tinderbox, but it didn't. We dodged that bullet, and I think we're looking forward to rain.
So we're gonna get our show started today a little different. You know, Dick and I were talking, and I have been on Radio Tacoma for various shows, and did the Cannabis Corner, I think about 2 or 3 years ago, right when the station started going. I recorded about 15 or 16 episodes and then had those going for a while. And then we kind of took a break and had the Hemposium playing and had a Canicon documentary playing. And now Uncle Dig is with us on the show, but a lot of people around Tacoma and maybe listening other places don't really know much about us and why we are actually on the air talking about cannabis. And so I just wanted to invite Dig to tell us a little bit about himself, and why are you on the radio here with us today on the corner talking about this federally illegal narcotic?
Well, the reason I chose to start talking about it was because, like you said, it's not legal in a lot of places, and there are still barriers to getting good information on cannabis. And I know that I've been researching cannabis recreationally just for fun, because I'm interested in the plant, for years. And it helps me medically, since I've been out of the Army. I'm a veteran. That's how I'm tied to the Tacoma area. I was stationed at Fort Lewis for a number of years, now JBLM. It seemed important to me that we get a diversity of voices out there speaking about cannabis in a positive light and letting people understand that it should be less regulated, not more regulated, less regulated. I would like people to be able to grow a plant and not have the government get overexcited about it to regulate it when it's been shown that this plant is far less harmful than the government would have had and you believe. And it's also far more beneficial than anyone really knew before.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you coming on the air with us, Dig. And I kind of have a similar story with cannabis. I was doing it when I was younger, in my 20s. I discovered when I was about 20, cannabis was something that would help me deal with my blindness. And I used cannabis under prohibition throughout the South. Yeah, it's been really crazy to look back and reflect on my time in Alabama. In the drug war, when I was getting my cannabis, I was getting it from a lot of African-American friends of mine, and I would have to go to their houses to get my medicine. And we always knew that we were under threat of being arrested or being accosted by the police. We never had any problems with anybody in the community. That was never a problem. It was just always the police that we were running from, and it really took a toll on my life and a lot of other people I knew, especially minorities in my life. I have friends that lost their careers. I had a friend I was just talking to, had to pay almost $20,000 to get out of possession of a cannabis pipe in Mobile, Alabama. And then I've came to cannabis here in Washington State. I became started doing cannabis writing in 2014, and have just kind of been around the cannabis activism scene since then, doing writing, reporting. And then 3 years ago, when Radio Tacoma started, they were near my house meeting, and I started meeting with them, and I started a political show called On the Record, and some folks might have heard a couple episodes of that, but that became a little more difficult to do because I'm not all the time doing politics, but I was writing about politics all the time. I was writing about cannabis all the time, and so I was like, well, I'm going to do a radio show on cannabis. And so I started the Cannabis Corner, and I've got some pretty good feedback on it. So I wanted to kind of continue that. And I'm right with you. I feel like just having just saying the word cannabis on the radio is a good thing, because there's not a lot of diversity of voices out there about this plant. And we'll get to that here in a minute on in our It's a, or at the end of the show on our It's a Bus segment, because we're going to talk about a Washington State case and how the news is just plastered with negative things about cannabis. And we want to do this show and be positive out there. And as Dig said, he has roots here in Tacoma too, and that's actually how we met. Dig and I met at the, if anyone remembers, the 2010, I believe it was, Occupy March here in Tacoma. It was the first one. And I decided that I was going to go. And like most things that I do as a visually impaired blind person, I don't really think about what that would entail. I just had my wife take me and drop me off at the park with my cane. And I just started across the park, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I've never been here before. Where do I go? So I started hearing louder voices and a megaphone over in a certain direction. I started walking, and I'm sure Dig saw me stumbling around and stuff. And all of a sudden somebody walked up to me and was like, hey, excuse me, sir, do you need some help? And I was like, sure. And lo and behold, it was Uncle Dig.
Yeah, I had just gotten back from Afghanistan. Not just gotten back, but in a few months, I had just returned from Afghanistan. And that was a big point in my political radicalization, was going to war. But I will say that I went to Occupy, and I was there alone as well. And I saw Lucas kind of feeling his way through the crowd. And I was like, does he not have anyone helping him? Because he seems very obviously, you know, blind. So I walked up and offered to help. And then he gave me the opportunity to try to guide him through the march and to its conclusion, where we left. And then I actually gave him a ride home. And that's how our friendship started.
Yeah, he dropped me off at home. And we sort of had like semi-contact over the years.
Yeah.
Because that was all the way back in 2010. It's hard to believe, Dig. It was 10 years ago that we met. and so... That was all the way back then, and then recently we sort of kind of became started being friends a little closer, because both of us are love of cannabis, and he does medical growing. And over the past 2 years, we've just kind of developed a friendship and like helping each other grow and talking about cannabis. And since we were already doing this sort of during the pandemic, we were like, hey, maybe we should put this on the radio. And so that is why you are hearing two guys from the South, one from Alabama and one guy from Texas, on your Tacoma radio. We love Tacoma. I do. This is my town. I plan on staying here as long as I can. It is a great place to live and just a really great community here in Tacoma. And I know Dig feels the same way.
Well, I'm not going to live there forever. I don't live there now, but Tacoma has always had a special place in my heart. Seattle's cool and everything, but I think if you really want to feel the heartbeat of the sound and the working people of the sound, you gotta go to Tacoma and beat feet and walk around. And it's one of the most beautiful port cities in the world, and really underappreciated, I think.
And that is going to bring us to our first story on our news part of our show, which is we're going to talk about Sean Worsley. And if you've been tuned into our show before, you'll know that Mr. Worsley was arrested all the way back in 2016 for cannabis in Alabama. And in our previous reporting, we've reported that he was put on probation, and he was actually released from jail and put on probation, and he went back to Arizona. But for some reason, Mr. Worsley did not know that he had a new court date. And he didn't show up for court, and he has some problems with the VA too. And the judge said, well, you didn't follow the rules of your probation, and he revoked Mr. Worsley's parole, and he had to come all the way back to Alabama to prison.
The article said that that Worsley claims that the VA would not let him access their drug treatment program. So I don't know if you know anything about some of these free drug programs in the VA. They're actually kind of competitive to get into. And if Worsley was using cannabis medically in a medically directed way, then the VA wouldn't see that as a problem of illicit substance abuse, and they wouldn't let him access drug treatment. That's perfectly viable. And so that also shows that our federal laws and our state laws need to be compassionately reoriented for certain cases like this, especially for veterans who are forced to navigate multiple different systems to access care. And sometimes if those systems conflict, it can cause very, very real world problems, as you can see.
Yeah, and Mr. Worsley, and in the article there on Gondrepreneurs, it does mention that this brings to forefront a bunch of different problems we have in our system. And one of them is, like you just spoke about, we have no federal leadership on this. There's just a bunch of patchworks of laws. He first had his medical cannabis card in New Mexico. And actually, when Mr. Worsley was picked up in Arizona, he had an expired card on him there and was arrested in Arizona for cannabis for having an expired card. So it's a whole mishmash of different laws. But thankfully, Mr. Worsley is out, and we are currently trying to get him on the show to tell us a little bit about his story. And he is out of prison, thankfully, finally.
Yeah, and I think it would be good to have him on and be able to talk to him, not only about his incarceration, but also some of his unique issues accessing cannabis as a veteran.
All right, our next story comes out of Colorado, and this is in Colorado Springs, and this is another kind of interesting story with a little twist in it. And Colorado Springs has said no to cannabis delivery. And it's all the same usual arguments against cannabis delivery. They say, well, if we have delivery, it's going to lead to more robberies. And they have this problem with cannabis in Colorado. It's called looping, which a medical cannabis supposedly will buy too much cannabis on their card and then sell it on the underground market. So they say that the cannabis delivery will lead to more looping and more cannabis on the illicit market. And it's real interesting also because they were going to charge $1 per delivery, and the city just said no to all this tax money.
Yeah, and this is also troubling because this isn't adult use. This is against allowing medical delivery. And as far as I'm concerned, whether or not how you feel about this personally, there are people that have challenges navigating new places because of their disability. You just heard Lucas to describe issues he had going to a protest. You could understand how people who are impaired in their mobility would have trouble accessing medical cannabis. So medical delivery is a necessity to truly have parable medical cannabis access to able-bodied people. And I think it's a good way to ensure access.
Yeah, and I sure wish we had it here in Washington State, and we don't, and not even close. They've tried to pass a couple bills. Another thing I found interesting about the article in Colorado Springs is they actually admitted that some shops were doing delivery. It's just the city wasn't enforcing anything against them, and they were like, well, most of our medical cannabis dispensaries are responsible, so they're not even having any problems. But the twist in the whole thing is the city council person said that the main reason they didn't want to have it is because of optics, because they're trying to get the Space Force headquarters located in Colorado Springs, and apparently cannabis delivery make the town look bad.
Yeah, well, I don't know if the Space Force might do a better job of that, but we're not a space podcast, so we're not going to talk about the militarization of space, are we? We're going to talk about how unmarked cars running around delivering cannabis isn't going to cause any visual thing. You're not going to see this. It's going to look like a pizza delivery, but they're not going to let them advertise, so it's not even going to have a placard on the top of the car. So I don't understand the objection, and I disagree with it. And Colorado Springs is already a military town. They have Air Force bases there. They have all kinds of military personnel there. And I don't see that that's a valid reason not to have it.
Our next story we're going to talk about is a story from the Weed Blog. And they talk about the states that use the most cannabis in the country. And it has all the states listed out there with recreational cannabis and some medical cannabis. And it has a lot of history on each one of the states. And it's really great to read. So I'd encourage everybody to go over there and check that out, theweedblog.com. But one of the most interesting things I found in the whole story is when you read on down the Washington, and then just really goes to show how perception and PR can pay off for you. It says right there in the article that Washington State, quote, has some of the most progressive cannabis policies in the country. What do you got to say about that, Dig?
No home grow, no cigar. And oh, by the way, y'all are kind of in the middle of the road as far as consumption. Now, there is a state at the very top end of this user list. The most people use cannabis in this state. This state also allows four plants for any citizen to grow in their backyard with no medical card. And of course, this state leading in consumption with the actual most progressive cannabis laws in the nation, Oregon. We win.
Congratulations. And I think even Massachusetts has better cannabis policies than us. And I have to tell you, except for, you know, they don't allow medical home grow, but Florida has a good medical cannabis system as far as being able to, once you get into the system, the products they have. So there are all kind of medical cannabis and cannabis systems popping up around the country that are giving Washington a run for their money. And you're right. We're kind of right in the middle of the consumption, which is crazy because we're selling billions of dollars of cannabis, and even the state admits half of the market is still underground.
Yeah, and honestly, no matter how hard you try to use systems like Metric, I don't know what they call it there, but where they're tracking seed to sale, there's going to be ways that people circumvent this. And here's something you got to realize about the cannabis plant. If you allow a cannabis plant, a female cannabis plant, to be fertilized by a male cannabis plant, that bud, just one bud on that plant, can produce up to 7,500 seeds. So once you start talking about a plant that's so generally available right now, and more people are allowed to cultivate it, you're not going to be able to track everything. The way you attract illicit growers into the legal market is you lower barriers to entry, you increase legalization legislation, you increase regulation as far as safety, you decrease regulation as far as tracking, and I guarantee you, it will be less expensive to cultivate legally and more people will do it.
So we will be back with Uncle Dig's garden update next week, but we're going to take a little detour here. And last week we were talking about terpenes, and we said we were going to have a terpene expert on the show. And I decided, well, I know a little bit about terpenes, so we're going to do something a little different today. And we're going to do a terpene quiz. Now, just as a refresher, terpenes are the compounds on cannabis that give it its smell. So when you open up the bag of cannabis that you just purchased at the 502 and you smell it, that fruity smell or that piney smell or whatever smell you smell, that is a whole array of terpenes there that are on that flower. Now, depending on how good the plant was grown or how well it was cured, that will have a big impact on the type of terpenes that are on the flower. And this really gets into a lot of chemistry, and we can talk a lot about all the different types of terpenes, and there's a whole lot of them. But I wanted to go through like a quiz, and we're going to quiz Dig on these because he said on his last show that was his first terpene article. So now we're going to give you a quiz, Dig. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So here we go. What type of volatile compounds are terpenes?
Okay. Terpenes are isoprenes. And an isoprene is a volatile oil that plants can produce. And anytime you smell a plant, you are actually smelling isoprenes.
Question number two. You ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
On a cannabis flower, in what structure do you find the terpenes?
In what structure? You find the terpenes, along with many other compounds, in the trichomes. Now, I'm going to describe a trichome for the listener so they know what I'm talking about, because we use these terms very frequently. When you You look at a cannabis bud, a cannabis flower. It's actually a cluster of a bunch of small flowers. If you zoom in with either a magnifying glass, a jeweler's loop, or a pocket microscope, you can start to see these little tiny, almost microscopic stalks on the plant with a little bubble of liquid that's very sticky on it. Those are called trichomes. They look... They're smaller or larger depending on the plant. That's why I said I gave you different ways of magnifying. Some plants, you can see their trichomes with the naked eye. Others, you do need a little visual magnification. A lot of growers look at the terpenes to decide when to harvest. When terpenes are milky but not clear, that's when they hold the maximum THC content. As they go cloudy, that's when many growers decide to harvest. You can take a bud from the dispensary and zoom into it and look and see the terpenes. But I haven't been able to see whether the terpenes are cloudy and amber on a dried, cured bud.
You mean trichomes?
Trichomes, yes. I haven't seen the trichomes go cloudy on a cured dried bud, but I can see the difference on a fresh bud. But I'm mildly colorblind, so you might be able to see how cloudy they are on a dried bud, whereas I can't.
So question number three, you ready to dig?
I am.
When vaporized or smoked, terpenes combined with cannabinoids like THC and CBD do what?
They create something that's called the entourage effect. Now, previously in much earlier cannabis research, we thought that THC was the primary and main and almost only psychoactive chemical in cannabis. Now, of course, we know that's not true. There's also CBD, CBG, THCA, et cetera, et cetera. But what terpenes do is they modulate the effects of these psychoactive chemicals to slightly change and alter and make more complex the way that that plant affects you. Without terpenes, THC may deliver kind of a standard high. But if you were to, example, add a terpene that may make you more sleepy, that THC would help make you more sleepy, resulting in an effect that is more than the sum of its parts. And that's what the entourage effect is.
Question number four, and I get asked this question a lot about sleep. So question number four has to do with that, Dig. So name two terpenes that I might want to look for if I am trying to help myself sleep.
Okay. So the one that I'm a fan of, and so are a lot of people in my life, is linalool. Linalool is kind of smells like lavender. It's what makes lavender smell the way it does. And it can be a mild sleep aid. Another terpene that you may look for is beta-mercene.
Question number five, our final question, has to do with the sativa and indica question, which is a really complicated question. So if sativas are, quote, uplifting, what terpenes are they more likely to have?
So in my experience and from my research, I've noticed that limonene is a uplifting terpene, and that's going to be the thing that tastes like lemons or smells like lemons. And then also pinene can be an uplifting terpene. And I think there's some difference between alpha and beta pinene, but I don't know if it's enough to talk about just for this question.
All right, Dig, I think you passed your quiz. You got 5 out of 5. Really good job. That being your first time ever reading about terpenes.
I don't like to. You gave me some good study materials, and there's a lot more online than there used to be. When I first explored terpenes like 3 or 4 years ago, it wasn't as compelling to me. And I'll explain why. In Oregon, up until the land of COVID, we've been able to smell our flowers. So I didn't necessarily need to know alpha pinene tastes like this, and therefore I need to look for that smell. And you just smell it, and you know if it smells good. As I like to say, the nose knows. If it smells good and it smells like it, it'll help. It probably will. So I would follow my nose. But now, being unable to do that, it's much more important for me to understand the terpene profiles of the flower I would be purchasing.
Yeah, terpenes were really one of the first things that really sparked my interest in writing more about cannabis or getting into this field. Is I came across this idea that terpenes cause the effects of each strain, and I'd been told for probably a year at that time it was sativa and indica all the time. Mm-hmm. And so when I found this terpene idea, it just really set me off, and I actually called the guy who, one of the first people who ever came up with this idea, Dr. Jeffrey Raber. I actually emailed him and got him on the phone and was like, Dr. Raber, is this correct? And he was like, yeah, and because he was like the only person out there saying it. And I was just kind of like, why is he saying it? And then all these other people were saying this other thing. And so that sort of intersection of science and myth is something that just sparked me, because I was like, that's what got me going, because I was like, well, then we have to get this out there that the myth is incorrect. But it's way more complicated than just saying sativa and indica is not true, because
correct,
a lot of indicas have the terpenes in it that help with sleep, and a lot of the sativas have the terpenes in them that help with uplifting effects. And sort of my theory on that is, and I've tried to talk to a couple biologists about this but haven't really been able to really pin down an answer, is my theory is it just happens to do with the different places the cannabis plant grows. There's on a mountainside, or where they sativas would work better in different areas, and indicas would grow better in different areas because of their size and how big they are. And so because of soil types and growing conditions, just over time and evolution, indicas got more of the terpenes with sleep, sativas got more of the terpenes with uplifting. But as Dr. Raber pointed out, with all the hybridization and everything, a lot of that has been kind of thrown out the window.
Yeah, we've been hybridizing this plant at a rate that's kind of mind-boggling, and we haven't been keeping track of what we've been doing, because most cannabis breeding that's been happening for the last 30 years is hyper illegal. And I think that maybe this may have been more true, but as I've always understood it, indica and sativa were always more of a way of describing plant phenotype, like, i.e., this plant is more like a sativa because it's tall and has large internodal spaces. And this plant is an indica because it's short and has stubby leaves and grows very thick and tight internodal spaces. But I almost wonder if that was always an imperfect way of describing the plant, especially when you're cultivating it in places where it wasn't traditionally cultivated, i.e. indoors and in greenhouses, different ways. I think all of the ways we cultivate can have a sizable impact on the expression of how the plant grows, both phenotypically and as a chemovar, which is a fun term that I've heard where people are talking about specifically the chemical makeup of the plant, irrespective of its physical appearance.
Okay, I like that word, chemovar.
Isn't it fun?
Yeah, it's just a nice little weed term. Cannabis and the weed culture has so many little terms that we like to throw out there, and different things that people play on other words. So it's just a lot of stuff to learn about the cannabis plant. And just, you know, to say that an indica plant grows short, like you were saying, it's not always a quite good description, because the things can grow as big as a car. You know, they get really big as far as the width and everything. So just learning more about the cannabis plant, and thanks for taking our terpene quiz today, Dig.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
And we're going to get on to our final segment this week. And we had a story out of Florida that some poor guys got busted for 50 pounds but ended up getting out of jail. But we changed our story at the last minute on something that happened in Washington State here. And this is what I alluded to at the beginning of the show on how we are proud that this show is giving a positive outlook on cannabis, because last week in the news here in Washington, it was just plastered all over the place. They had one of these old style drug war raids where they raided 27 houses and they're indicting 11 people, and they found thousands of cannabis plants. It was an out-of-state mail operation. The Postal Service police are actually the ones that led it, with King County Sheriff. And to me, it's just a really big waste of money. And just as a final note on this, Dig will take us out with his comments. But right now, Washington State is in this big social equity fight. But then at the same time, they're out here still arresting people for cannabis and creating social equity problems on top of social equity problems. So I really wish Washington State would get serious about what they're saying and stop this drug war, because that's what I-502 was supposed to be about.
Yeah. As long as you keep, like I said, the barriers to entry into the legal industry so high, and you limit licenses irrespective of demand, you're gonna have people that step outside of the system to meet this demand. That was the whole point of, quote, legalizing cannabis, was to take it out of the unregulated hands of the, let's call it the people's market. I don't like the term black market, but you have to make it affordable legally, or someone's going to make it affordable illegally. And that's what's happening. Also, because we don't have federal legalizations, people in legal states are going to divert. And there's nothing that federal law enforcement can do to stop it. There's nothing that local law enforcement can do to stop it. And there is nothing that your average voter can do to stop it. The only way you stop diversion is allowing access across the board, and then you can have a completely regulated market. Not until then.
Well, that is our show for this week. I really appreciate Dig joining us and co-hosting the show with us. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can contact me at lucasbarfield@gmail.com. And how can folks get in contact with you, Dig?
Yeah, they can get in touch with me at UncleDig4@gmail.com. And also, you can follow me on Instagram, UncleDigDug.
This is Cannabis Corner, hosted by Lucas Barfield. If you would like to get in contact with your host, he is on Twitter at MJIsMedicine. Your musical selection is The Happy Monster by Chubby Jackson and his orchestra, recorded on 78 in 1947. You can find this music and much more at The Great 78 Project, an archive of historical music recordings at great78.archive.org. You are listening to 101.9 KTAH Radio Tacoma. Thank you.